This is the Community Close-Up.
It's a pleasure to have Brandy Schrader in, and Brandy is the director of the Lima Samaritan House, and that would be in Lima, Ohio here, by the way, just in case, you know, people are wondering. So is this your first visit in here, Brandy, or not?
Yes, it is. This is my first time here.
Yeah. Are you excited?
Sure.
Or scared?
No, never scared. I like sharing our mission.
Amen. And how long have you been involved with them?
About 22 years. I was there previously for an internship in college and then left to work elsewhere, and there was a position open, and I came back within about a year.
What made you come back?
I came back for less stress, which was a huge joke.
What did you do prior to that?
I came back for flexibility. I went to work at Job and Family Services, but mm-hmm. then I became pregnant with my second daughter, and mm-hmm. I just wanted to be able to have a little bit more flexibility with my hours, and that was something that I knew we could work in at Samaritan House, and I don't know. It all just kind of worked out. I called a previous mentor there just to kind of vent, and she said, hey, there's this opening, and we kind of laughed because, you know, it wasn't what I would normally come back for, and then it just worked out. I ended up finishing my degree while I was there for business, and so I have a background in human services and then also business, which works great for a homeless shelter.
What does human services mean exactly?
It's social work.
Okay.
Yeah, it's social work. So different colleges call it something different. But I mean, for a social work, you need to go get your licensure and whatnot.
Where are you located at in Lima?
328 West McKibben. I generally tell people to kind of look up because it's the old nun convent at the St. Rose complex there where the St. Rose Church is. And so you can see their steeple is very beautiful. Their church is very beautiful. So you can just kind of look up. And you can see that steeple and kind of guides you.
I know right where you're at. When you first said that, I thought, I know where you're at. You're not too far from the railroad tracks.
No, not at all. Just a block.
That's amazing. Yeah. How long has the organization been there? Quite a while?
We have been there since 1987. I think that they had to do some work. The convent wasn't being used. And so that's kind of part of the history. I know in 86, I believe it was Pastor Donetta Warren, saw a need and mm-hmm. was taking people into her home and, you know, providing that out of her own pocket for a while, their needs. And as her home filled, her church, I think as the story began to satisfy some of those needs and as it became known in the community, they could see that they needed a different place. And that's when church people and for Change and Reconciliation kind of helped form a committee. And Father Howell was a member on that committee. And he recognized that the old nun convent would be available and kind of, you know, help that work together. And so I think the date is like July 1st, midsummer of 87.
All right.
And in that first year, they served approximately 250 women and children. And that's about what we've got close to 400 for many years. And now the last couple of years, we're around that 250. And that's unduplicated. So that's not counting anyone twice in that year.
Well, for those that have no idea, what exactly is the Lima Samaritan House? What is your function? You mentioned serving. I'm assuming when you say serve, it's not just dinner. You
know, no.
We're doing the other things. Yeah.
It is a homeless shelter, an emergency homeless shelter for women and children. Children have to be accompanied by their parent, you know, or single women that serve in that same capacity. So it's homeless and or abused. We are not simply in a, you know, an abuse shelter
function.
That is covered with Crossroads, although we do serve about 35% of our population is directly coming from a domestic violence situation, but not everyone's fleeing, so you know sometimes it's just that's been the circumstance and they need a fresh start, but there are other reasons for homelessness, and that isn't I think sometimes people have been protected in the families that they've grown up, and it's easy to pass judgment and say that person's lazy or, you know, something else. But, you know, that means we've been pretty fortunate to come up in a supportive environment because a lot of people haven't. Right. They didn't have those things. That's very difficult. It's easy to pass judgment like that real quick when you don't really know their stories. But, you know, we deal with a lot of generational issues that have just been passed on and passed on, you know, alcoholism and drug addiction or just neglect or sexual abuse. And that has an impact and it carries to the next generation and the next one, and there are things lacking. Mm-hmm. And at some point, you can't tell me there's not a difference between someone coming up that knew where they were going to lay their head at night and feeling safe and having, you know, family support versus someone whose mother was a prostitute and are being bounced from couch to couch and who's, you know, taking advantage of that situation. And we see a lot of that. We see a lot more than you would want to believe is happening.
Well, I think I think the key phrase, what you just said, you want to believe is happening. A lot of times folks want to put the blanket over their head. It's not really happening here. There's some of the others in other places, but we have homeless in Lima, and there's obviously some struggles with, as you mentioned, you serve 250 somewhat a year, and you've had as many as 400.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
Huh. And it doesn't end. It's not just a low-income problem. I think sometimes money makes it easier to cover something up, but it's not just that. So, you know, they may not end up at the shelter, or they may end up at the shelter for a shorter time if they have a stronger network. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just for example, counseling costs money, or you need connections, or you need help, or you need someone to guide you. If you are new to the area, or you're young, you know, you don't have access, or maybe you don't have the right mindset, you know, to go seek those services either. Those are the type of things, you know, if you have more money, or you have more resources, or you have health insurance, those are things you have access to. Not everyone has access to the same things. Mm-hmm. There's something that I say when I go in to talk to younger students a lot of times, and a way that's easier for them to understand is, you know, it's very quick to say the kid sitting next to me smells bad, and to go talk about that child, you know, that child, or bully them or something. But do you stop to think about that you're assuming they have the same means that you have, that their parents were able to bring in laundry soap, and that they had running water and a washing machine, and that they knew they were able to do that? You know, you have to think, and as adults, I think we can learn a lot the same way. Step back for a second. You know, it's easy for us to put the assumptions on that someone else's life and the access to what we have is the same thing that they have, and they're just choosing not to use that.
Oh, I understand. You know, I understand.
Yeah, it's really not true.
And
yeah.
It's sad.
It is sad.
By the way, if you're just joining us for Community Close-Up, I have the pleasure of speaking with Brandy Schrader. She is the head director of the Lima Samaritan House. Brandy, one of the things you just talked about was the money and means thing. Take me through, or take our listener through, a typical day for somebody coming into the shelter. First of all, how do they even find out about you?
Well, we're not at an undisclosed location, so we're publicly known. We receive referrals just from individuals. We have, you know, access to the website, so a lot of people find us there from an internet search.
What is your website while we're
SamaritanHouseLima.org.
All right.
It's a fabulous, well-put-together website, thanks to, you know, Chris. Right.
We won't mention any names. Employees. Yeah.
Yeah. very resourceful. We try to make that pretty transparent. And so, you know, the requirements for coming in and the expectations are kind of there and set forth. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, let's just say I know about the organization and I'm going to come in. We would encourage people to call first so that, you know, it's best use of all of our time. And we can do some of the kind of screening over the phone. We like to give people the expectations because it is a working program. There isn't, you know, it's emergency shelter. It's not a recovery house. We hope that people can recover in spirit and have rest and, you know, find new hope there. But none of us, I think most of us would agree that you can't better your situation without walking through it, know, and seeking solutions. It's not something to hide from. So, for instance, if I would have called in, you know, I'd do some screening and know that there was a room available, make an appointment, or just come in, go through the intake process. They would be met by a house manager. So we have a house manager 24/7. We prefer to do intakes during normal hours or like second shift. But if a situation makes it necessary, it's just that other people are sleeping during the night, you know. But if there was a DV situation in the middle of the night and someone needed to come in, or your work schedule only allows you to come in, then of course we will do that. But we'll just say that I came in the morning and I did my intake. I met with the house manager. We'll go through all of the rules and the expectations and sign them up to meet with a case manager. They'll have a case manager they meet with twice a week to help identify, you know, kind of what got you there. How can we help this to not happen again? What kind of resources do you have? What strengths do you have? What do you need? How can we help you? How can we assist you in that? And I guess that's the key thing, is we want to assist them, not do it for them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Train them or teach them on their own to
exactly.
get out there and do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, if there's children involved, then that takes, it's a little bit more time. But we have 17 bedrooms, so we are able to house up to 38 people, but it just depends on how the families present, you know, the sizes.
Sure.
So we have, the largest room we have has 5 bedrooms, but you can also fit a crib in there too, or actually we fit 2 cribs in there with the 5 beds. Mm-hmm. So they're assigned a room when they come in, and linens in our rooms, they're very comfortable. We try to, it is a business, but I always want it to be a home before a business. You know, we're working in their home. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of holds that space so you feel like your home when
sure.
you're there.
Yeah.
So they would be taken to their room and no one is doubled up. So a family would be in a room, but there wouldn't be like two singles put into a room. So the beds are just, we've done the best we can to utilize the space the best we can to serve as many in a healthy way. We used to double up singles. That was a hard decision to make to not do that any longer, but we serve a lot of people with, you know, drug addiction or mental illness. And like I say, if I was in a room, I talk a lot, and there's someone in the room, you know, if you have a manic person and a depressed person, once that bedroom door shuts, I don't really know where that's going.
I understand, yeah. Is there a cost to the individual coming
in? There is no cost. There's no cost, but you are required to save 80% of your income. If they would come in and have, you know, already a car payment or insurance cost or whatnot, they'll work that out with their case manager.
Well, how that brings up this question, Brandy. How are you funded? Where does your finances come from?
By prayer.
Yeah?
About 50% comes from federal grants. So that has its own lots of red
paperwork.
Tape and strings, but mm-hmm. we're still grateful to have it because mm-hmm. that's a lot of, it's about $152,000 a year is that portion. So it would be very difficult to come up with that on top of finding the rest of what we need.
So how much do you need a year, guesstimate?
It's around $300,000. I didn't like reaching that number this year. We, as a staff, you know, we're a pretty small staff. We don't have access to health insurance and things like that. It's just not something at this level that
sure,
is something that can be afforded. But we've been blessed with a great team that it just works.
Yeah.
It works. So the rest of the other 50%, we write grants continually throughout the year, seek additional funding sources. We receive funds from businesses, churches, individuals.
If somebody listens to the program and they would like to write a check, first question is, is there a tax advantage to the individual?
Yes.
The second question is, how and where would they make the donation? How would they do that?
You can send it directly to the shelter, and you can also go through the website.
All right.
To do that. And you can create a form there and either send a check in or go through PayPal to make a donation. But we are a 501c3, so
okay.
It is a tax exempt
organization. I figured you
were,
but most
yeah.
people are. We've got about less than 2 minutes left in the program here. I have a myriad of questions, but what is provided? Medical, is that provided through you? Food, is that provided for the meals, three meals a day, et cetera, et cetera?
Within the shelter, they receive case management. We have laundry facilities. We have the supplies for that. We, unless they're very picky, we have personals. So anything that we can provide for them, mm-hmm. Personal hygiene needs, we're going to provide that because that helps them to be able to save more mm-hmm. towards their future housing
sure.
expenses. And then food is provided. They can choose to bring in additional food, but that when they bring that food in, it needs to be enough for the entire house because we don't want one child sitting eating
pancakes
and then one eating, you know, a steak dinner. So,
yeah.
But we are truly blessed. We're so blessed that sometimes we have an abundance of too much of something and we're able to call other agencies that are similar to us and share those. I think if it were me donating, as long as it's going to the same population,
right.
that
right.
I would much prefer that you share it versus, you know, put it in the dumpster. So all that is provided for
okay.
them. You asked about medical. Medical, we don't provide through that, but we have very strong relationships in the community. So a lot of applications for medical assistance or transportation assistance, daycare, those are housed in-house with us. So when they meet that with the case manager, she can eliminate about four other appointments just by sitting and helping them fill out the applications and faxing them to those organizations. So it gets things rolling for
okay.
them.
Well, Brandy, our time is up, but before we go, give our listeners your website address and your phone number very clearly. So if they have questions, they can call you, right?
Sure.
Okay.
The website address is SamaritanHouseLima.org, and the phone number is 419-222-4663.
My guest today has been Brandy Schrader, and she's the director of the Lima Samaritan House. Thanks, Brandy.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for the Community Close-Up. Community Close-Up each Saturday and Sunday at 5:15. Here on the Good News Station, WTGN Lima.